Grant Cameron, one of the greatest researchers in the field of ufology, and he is our next guest with our split show on Coast to Coast AM. And tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about UFOs. What did some people know, and how did they know it? Grant Cameron, of course, is a Canadian researcher. He has researched a major UFO flap in 1975, 76, as well as the early Canadian government investigation into flying saucers, including the MJ-12 documents and its connection to the former president of Penn State University. Grant works now leading him into research areas about UFOs surrounding the president of the United States, the White House, and also senators, congressmen. He's back on Coast to Coast. Grant Cameron. Grant, how are you?
Just good, George. Thanks for having me on and listening to some of my tales.
I'm looking forward to this as well. What have you been up to lately?
What I've been up to lately is I was down at the UFO Congress in Phoenix because we live up in the cold here. So we go down and enjoy your nice warm weather down there. I was at Congress in Phoenix. And while I was there, I'd heard about the Senator Barry Goldwater UFO papers, did some investigation and found out that they had three files, possibly 300 pages of UFO material. And so just before I went down a few days early for Congress, and went to the Arizona Research Society, where these papers are, and went through them and copied about 145 pages of UFO letters that Goldwater had written and found some absolutely fascinating material.
Barry Goldwater, who wanted to be president, wanted to run, we ran against Lyndon Johnson, obviously didn't win. He was obsessed with trying to get to the bottom of UFOs, but he was stymied, wasn't he, Grant? They wouldn't let him get the information?
Yeah, there's in these letters, in these 145 pages, there's one particular case he talks about, and ufology people have known about this since the 1980s. This is the encounter that he had with General Curtis LeMay, and Curtis LeMay also ran for president. He was on the 1968 ticket as vice presidential candidate with
was he with Nixon?
No, he was in the independents with
68 would have been
with the guy from the South.
Presidential candidate?
Yeah.
What party?
Independent.
Independent.
George Wallace.
Oh, George Wallace, the former governor of Alabama.
Yeah, he was the vice presidential candidate on a ticket. So both of them were. And Goldwater, in these letters, there's about 18 or 24 letters where he talks about this encounter with General LeMay. And looking at the letters, it seems that it occurred maybe 64 when he was the Republican candidate. And the story, we've always known the story, but it's a little bit bigger now. We've got more material. And basically what it was, he told the New Yorker magazine that he was getting up to 100 requests from people to get inside the Blue Room. And he said, I never got inside the room, so I can't tell you what's in there, but we all know what the rumors are. And the rumor, of course, was that the Blue Room at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is where they kept the real secret stuff, possibly bodies, possibly hardware. And the original rumor had started in Canada with Wilbur Smith, who ran the Canadian government program. He had told an associate of his and the guy's wife, and she told me that Wilbur had told them that hardware material was being held in a room in the Pentagon. So it appears that it moved from the Pentagon to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in the 60s. And in the 60s, when Goldwater went to ask General LeMay about this, LeMay was the chief of staff of the U.S. Air Force. So he was sitting on the Joint Chiefs of Staff as the air advisor to the president. Very powerful guy. So Goldwater goes to him, and LeMay is his friend. I've actually reproduced some documents on the site which indicate that they were very close friends with their wives, and they would go out for dinner and stuff. And so he went to LeMay, and he said, General LeMay, I understand you have this room at Wright-Patterson where you keep all the real secret UFO stuff. Now, General, I'd like to go in there. And he said, I've never seen LeMay get that angry. He cussed me out. He said, I can't go in, and you sure aren't going in, and if you ever bring it up again, I'll court-martial you.
Wow.
Now, this story was first told in the 1980s. But as I said, there's about two dozen occasions in these letters from 1966. These letters run from 66 to 96, where he talks about this incident. And there's two important things that happened because of that. Number one was when I first announced that I had these material and I sent it around to different researchers, a bunch of researchers started to come forward, and people had actually filed Freedom Information Act requests on this whole incident of the Blue Room. Bill Moore back in the 1980s had filed, and he had a document, which I was just talking to Lee Graham, who was involved with Bill Moore back in the 80s, and Lee Graham told me there's one particular document that I had put on the website with the Goldwater documents, under the Blue Room documents. And this document is a 1955 document, and it's called Radar Scope Blue Room. And this was given to Bill Moore by the Falcon. Now, it's not Richard Doty. This is the Falcon, the DIA guy who was the main character. And he said, take this document and give it to Lee Graham. Lee Graham confirms to me this is the first document he ever got, was this Blue Room document from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And the reason they were giving this stuff to Lee Graham was because Lee Graham had worked at Skunk Works on the U-2. He had a security clearance. And every time they would give him a document, it would initiate an investigation. But anyway, these FOIAs are filed. And the Falcon also gives Bill Moore a project name. And he also gives him a number for a film that was taken inside this Blue Room. Now, in 1991, a researcher by the name of Brian Parks, who also worked with Moore and with all these people back in the 1980s in California, files an FOIA and confirms, yes, they have this film. So he asks for the film, and they say it was destroyed in 1965. So he asks for the destruction memo, and it comes out, yes, they did destroy the document. It was held at Norton Air Force Base. So we actually have some backup material, and we actually have Tony Bregaglia, who is one of the newer Roswell researchers who did the work on the Nitinol, the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, working on the sort of the memory medal in 1948. He produced all these papers. He's been very interested, and he's gotten into it. So we actually knew there was a film and that it was destroyed, which is bad news for researchers, but I can tell researchers that there is still a film that they didn't get. There is a top-secret film. It is held in private hands. It was also held at Norton Air Force Base.
Well, are we sure the original one was destroyed?
Well, we've seen a destruction memo. This is where Tony Bregaglia wants to start asking questions about what documents do you have about the Blue Room? Because it seems to confirm there was a Blue Room in 1955 at Wright-Patterson Air Force. And all they've given us is they say it's destroyed, and they gave us the destruction, a handwritten notation of the destruction, and it said it was unedited and unusable.
Maybe that's how they got the name Project Blue Book.
In the Air Force, you would have a lot of things being called blue. Like there's a rumor that there's two Blue Rooms at Area 51. And the other important thing about this thing, there's all this research that's now starting to be initiated about the Goldwater story. The thing that I find very important about it is I call it a Goldwater reaction. And in the modern ufology, you'll see there's a pattern in modern ufology, and particularly John Alexander's book has brought this out, and Leslie Kane gets into it a little bit. And it's sort of the idea that the government really doesn't know what's going on. John Alexander has gone to all his high-ranking people, and he's asked them, okay, is there a project? And basically, John's come back and said, there's good news, bad news. The good news is the government's telling the truth. The bad news is there's no UFO cover-up. Everybody he talked to, all the high-ranking people, have said, no, there's nothing to it, nothing. The Goldwater is a Goldwater reaction, which gets exactly the opposite reaction. John says all the people told him nothing to it. There was no reaction that there was any black project or whatever.
Well, what possessed him? I mean, here he was. He was a five-time senator from Arizona, Grant, ran for the presidency. What possessed him to want to uncover UFOs? Did somebody tell him something? Did he come across something while in Arizona?
Well, all he said in the letters was that he had pilot friends. He had seen them. He said, I never saw one myself, but I have pilot friends that saw them. That was the only sort of indicator that he gave that he...
But somebody must have spearheaded him to get interested in this.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have just woken up and said, hey, I want to check out UFOs.
Yeah, he was a pilot, and I think it was basically this pilot thing. He never really named something that happened. There was, in the letters, there was some indication that something had happened. And that was, if you look at the letters before 1981, and you look at the letters after 1981, they change. Before 1981, he talks about the LeMay incident and, you know, how he was chewed out and all this sort of stuff. And then he says, but beyond that, I really don't know anything more than the man on the street. And in 1981, he gets a letter from a guy who is, it sounds like he's a radar, ham radar operator. All these guys, LeMay and Goldwater and all these people were ham radar operators. And this guy writes a book, this is 1981. This is just after the Roswell book comes out by Moore and Berlitz, the Roswell incident. And in that, he asks LeMay in this letter, he says, and this book, the Roswell incident, is coming out, how much of this is really true? And he basically answers the letter. He says, they are partly true, but not completely. I can't give you any other answer than that, so please don't push it. So he's saying, before 1981, he's saying, I don't know anything. And then he gets this question on the Roswell incident in 1981, after the book comes out, and he says, it's partly true, but I can't give you any other answer than that, so please don't push it. And in 1981, he also makes a statement. He says, I have been interested in this subject for a long time, and I do know, he doesn't say I think, he says, I do know that whatever the Air Force has on the subject is going to remain highly classified. So I started looking back, and I tried to figure out, well, what happened in 1981? What changed that made him go from saying, I don't know anything more than the man on the street, to this guy who seems to be indicating to people that he knows some of the parts of the story and don't push me on it. And what happened in 1981 is he became chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And the Roswell book had just come out. He had just become the chairman. And I'm guessing that he said, I want a briefing. I want to find out what's going on here. And he gets more material. And he basically shuts down after 1981, and he says, you know, it's going to remain highly classified, and if the government did classify it, they did the right thing, and I'm proud of them. And because he was a hawk, he was a military hawk, so he understood the principle that of why they were doing the cover-up, and he sort of joins the cover-up. But before 1981, he says, I don't need anything more than the man on the street. After 1981, he never says that again. So you have these patterns in these letters, and to me, it was just so significant that he got this reaction, because I'm a Canadian. I've only had three interactions with high level American people who should know what's going on, and in every single case, I got a Goldwater reaction. I got people who just basically said, "Yes, this is for real. I'm not talking about it," or whatever. And your colleague, George Knapp,
yep,
also had an encounter with a high-level guy. He tracks this guy down Area 51, and he says, you know, if the story's true, this guy's going to know. And he goes, and the guy basically says, yeah, it's true, and basically confirms the whole thing. So my question is, you know, if John goes to bat 50 times, strikes out every time, how is it that I can be batting 1,000% that the people I'm talking to, like, you know, Vice President Dick Cheney and people like this, are all basically reacting like Goldwater, that they've got this reaction where, yes, this is for real. And
why are they left in the dark, Grant?
Why are they left in the dark? You mean why the cover up?
Yeah, well, I think most of these people, like the Goldwaters, who are trying to get the information, don't. They can't get it. They're just suppressed from getting it. So to me, it sounds like there's something bigger than government going on here.
Okay. Well, I would look at it this way. Goldwater was interested. And then I think in 81, when he found out, he joined the other side. And I wrote an article. It was called 64 Reasons Why the Government's Covering Up the Truth. It's on my website. And I went through all these different reasons. And Goldwater plays into this sort of idea that it's military technology. Let me give you an example, a prime example of what I think is the main reason why there's a cover-up.
All right.
And why all the people like Goldwater and, like, for example, Jimmy Carter is very interested. Jimmy
Yes.
Carter gets to the White House, he shuts down.
Reagan was interested.
Yeah, and he shut down. And Ford made some very dramatic speeches in the 60s. We should get people in and drag them in here and subpoena, and we should get them to testify. And he gets to the White House, he never says another
Clinton
thing.
Was interested. Nixon was interested.
Yeah.
Kennedy was. They all were.
But when they get there, they shut down. So the reason I wrote this paper, the 64 reasons why they've decided to cover up the truth or then not tell you what's going on, is I wanted to see it from their side. What are they being told that changes them from one side to the other? And there's a prime example of how this, of the whole thing, and it all comes down to military lead time. People will say that the government isn't working on this, it's not important. It's absolute nonsense. They have to be working on this. And the prime example is the U.S. military has always been ahead in military technology all over the world. There was only one time they weren't. World War II, they had the atomic bomb and they were going to use it against Japan. But in Europe, they were outdone in technology. And that was the V-1 rockets coming out of Germany. The Americans had not worked on rocket technology yet. And the V-1s were being shot over, landing on London. You had the king, the queen, the prime minister, all the people in bomb shelters at night.
Oh, yeah. Panicked. Nothing
they could do to stop it. And in during that period, the science advisor to Roosevelt, and this is a true story, science advisor to Roosevelt goes and gives a briefing to then chief of staff of the armed forces in Europe, General Dwight Eisenhower. And the guy that gave the briefing was Vannevar Bush. And Vannevar Bush was the technological czar during World War II. He was in charge of all the scientific programs for all the developments, the radar, proximity fuse, homing torpedo, atomic bomb, all the inventions of World War II that the Americans did. This guy was running it. He was the top scientist. And he was also identified in the 1950 top secret Canadian government memo as being the guy that was running the UFO program. So we go back to World War II, and you got to see, just before Roswell happens, just before they find out about the UFOs, this is what happens. He goes into this briefing with Eisenhower, and he says, I got to tell you about this V1 thing. They're launching these rockets, and we've got no defense against them, and they're dropping on London, and we've got people in bomb shelters. And he goes through the whole thing about, we found these, and this is a technology that we think they have. We haven't worked on the technology. We're getting to work on this. And at the end of the briefing, Eisenhower looks at him and says, you know, you're scaring the hell out of me. What are we going to do? And all Vannevar Bush says is, the only thing we can do is bomb their production facilities to slow it down and hope that we win the war before they get this thing into full production, because the Americans don't have the technology. And that's the whole key, is that if you're the president, and I'm the science advisor, and I come to you, I say, you know, President Norrie, here's the situation. We're working on the Iranian program here, and we've suddenly discovered, our intelligence has discovered, they're really not working on the nuclear weapon. It's a cover for UFOs. They've been working on UFOs all the time, Mr. President. And the Iranians, we've determined that they actually have the technology, and they're flying around the United States of America right now, and there's nothing we can do to stop it, Mr. President. And, Mr. President, we've also discovered that they've got the abduction technology. And I'm sorry to tell you, Mr. President, but we believe you're being abducted. And so then what's the president going to say? He's going to say, well, what the heck's going on? I mean, what are we going to do?
Yeah, stop
then,
it. How do we
say,
stop
well,
it?
We haven't worked on it, Mr. President. Give us half a trillion dollars a year. We started working on it yesterday, and we'll get to it. And he says, well, how long is it going to take? And he said, well, it took the Iranians 65 years to develop it, so we're a little bit smarter than the Iranians. Give us 50 years, Mr. President. We'll develop the UFO technology. That's assuming that we're not working on it. Lead time in a battle, especially in today's type of battle, it can be over in 2 days. Because if your plane is 10% faster than the other guy's plane, if you've got the bomb that they can't stop, if you've got a missile that they can't stop, the war is over. You can wipe out all their troops.
That's right.
Away.
If you use a Grant, hold on for a second. We're going to hit this break. We're going to come right back. And also, I'm going to mention a 1988 interview on Larry King's then radio show where he was talking to Goldwater, asked him if he thought the government was withholding UFO evidence. Goldwater says, yes, I do. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And here's what else then-Senator Barry Goldwater said. He said, I certainly believe in aliens in space. They may not look like us, but I've got a very strong feeling that they have advanced beyond our mental capacity. I think some highly secret government UFO investigations are going on that we just don't know anything about and probably never will unless the Air Force discloses them. Up next, Grant Cameron will continue talking about this on Coast to Coast AM. And back with Grant Cameron. Grant, let's get back into this work here. And do you think disclosure will ever come? I don't.
I don't think it will come in my lifetime. But then you never know. I think, like as I said, there's a film that the U.S. Air Force missed, a top secret film. I think that is coming out sooner rather than later. It may shake things up because we know where it came from. We know it had Quintanilla's name on it. We know which rocket launch it was, and we know who had possession of the film. So stuff like that, you never know what's going to break. I think we've made some ground, like in terms of Steve Bassett has actually gotten the White House to admit that they're behind this thing, and they should have been. The president is the guy who is the guy that should be in charge. It shouldn't be the Air Force. It shouldn't be any other organization, because the president, you know, if it's a military running it, he's the head of the military. If it's a government cover-up, he's the chief executive officer of the government. And we're dealing with aliens. We're dealing with people outside the United States. And he's any sort of negotiation with people from outside the United States, he's the chief of staff. So that is the office it should be in. So we've actually sort of made some headway in terms of knowing where the questions should be asked and where the pressure should be put on. I think one of the problems with disclosure, and this goes maybe to a little bit to when I was filing, as people know, when the Clintons were in, I got 1,000 pages of FOIA material from the Office of Science and Technology Policy, the science advisor to the president, and it dealt with the Rockefeller Initiative. And this is, Stephen Bassett has a petition on right now on this Rockefeller Initiative documents. And so we knew right then who all the people were in the Clinton administration who were involved and all this stuff. So when they left office, I filed, once Clinton's papers became public five years after his he left office, I filed and 100 Freedom of Information Act requests, and I got a bunch of material back, and a lot of that seemed to confirm, you know, that the president was sort of out of the loop. He was trying to do something. And you get in a situation where it appears that the president really is not running the show. So there is some sort of way that they've in order to maintain the cover up, they've made the paper trail go away, and they've taken the president out of the loop in terms of he may know, you know, this is a subject, but don't talk about it. You know, you have plausible deniability. We're taking care of it. We're working on it. But one of the things I discovered in going through all the documents that came out of the Clinton Library when I filed these 100 Freedom of Information Act requests is that there basically were no letters from people to the president on UFOs. And we've got 300 million people in the United States, and basically vast majority of the material in there is Stephen Greer's material. Stephen Greer was working very hard, sending briefing documents and extensive papers to the president. Mm-hmm. But in terms of some citizens saying, Mr. President, I want this taken care of, there really was none. So it comes down to if you're a politician and you're dealing with this sort of a radioactive issue, it's an issue where you're going to just bypass it because really nobody's questioning. And I think that may be one of the problems we have in the UFO community, that we have it as a hobby. People are very interested in it. They like to go to conferences. They like to watch movies about it and stuff. But if it takes getting off your backside and writing a letter, nobody's going to do it, which is, you know, why we said that one of the things that could break UFO, the UFO thing, is $20 a barrel, $20 a gallon for gas, because then you're going to get people where it's a money issue. And money issue, people will go to the streets and they'll protest.
Sure.
But as long as that gas is $2 or $3 a gallon, it's like, who cares? We'll drill another oil well. There is really nothing that motivates the UFO issue out onto the street where people are ready to sort of put their life on the line to get, you know, 500,000 people on the Washington Mall. It's for most people, it's just sort of an interest, and people are not that motivated in the UFO community to political action. And I've said numerous times that if you take a look at all the political movements in history where it's an ugly issue, the government doesn't want to deal with it, whether it's women's rights to vote, gay rights, AIDS, civil rights, all those things where the government refused to move on the issue, the same as they do UFOs, pretend it's not there, all this sort of stuff. It took groups getting 10, 20, 100,000, half a million people on the Washington Mall, and then they suddenly paid attention.
Well, why do you think, Grant, government is not saying anything? Not only just this government, but all of them.
Well, as I said, I think it's the military lead time thing. It's the military, anybody who's been read in realizes the fact that there's this military technology involved and that you don't want the other country getting this thing because it takes so long to develop it that you're finished. If the other side has got the weapon and you don't have the weapon, and most people don't get read in. Like, that's one of the things that if you talk to scientists or you talk to people, maybe even like John Alexander or people in the government, everybody thinks, well, if this is for real, I would be told. And there are only very few people, and that's the way Vannevar Bush set it up in World War II, that only the people who actually need to know about this are told that there are very few people. So if you're looking and saying the government doesn't know, that may be true. There may be nobody in the actual government that knows what's going on. It's people in behind the government,
sure,
who are advising and running the programs and stuff like that actually know what's going on.
So you think, though, it's primarily military, that's why they're not saying anything?
It'd be military contracts. They've got it out of the government aspect. And I think that's important. If you take a look back with the remote viewing program, it sort of gives us a hint of what happened. The remote viewing program, Ronald Pandolfi he's the CIA guy that's supposedly the head of the phenomenology desk at the CIA with UFOs and paranormal phenomena and all this sort of stuff. And he takes great pride in saying that he's the guy who shut down the remote viewing program. And the reason in my opinion, the reason they shut down the remote viewing program was the fact that Jim Mars was coming out with a book. Jim Mars had figured it out. He had all the remote viewers, and he was coming out with a book on remote viewing. So the government's in a position. You're either going to let Mars come out with this book, and then you're stuck with this program, or you do a very smart thing. You block the book, and Jim Mars will talk about the fact that the book was blocked. He couldn't get to the editors. He couldn't get this book published. And then you shut the program down, and you say, oh, there's nothing to it. Same as UFOs. Nothing to it. It's a bunch of garbage. We shut it down. And the reason they shut it down is because there's a paper trail. That Jim Mars has got the paper trail. The security has been compromised. So you shut the program down, say it doesn't work. Then you're safe, and you move it to deep black. You move it to the NSA. So that, in the same with UFOs, if there's no paper trail, people can talk all they want. Like the story, I mentioned to you this story about George Knapp having this very high-ranking guy. It was telling him about the fact that everything was for real at Area 51. And George says to him, he says, well, you must have been petrified about the fact that everybody was going to discover what you were doing up there. And the guy said, no, we weren't really worried that people were going to figure out the secret, what we were doing. We were scared the live alien was going to escape. So, I mean, people on the inside, I think, realize that it's very well kept, because as long as they've got the bodies, as long as they've got the hardware, and as long as they've got the documents, you, I, and everybody else can tell all the stories we want. It really doesn't mean anything until you get some hard evidence, and they control all the hard evidence. So you make the paper trail go away. You put it into a black program where you've got a lot of security to protect it, and you can work without worrying about this thing being disclosed. And you, I, and everybody else talking about it is not going to help. And the fact that the UFO community is not going to march on Washington. We had one incident in the 1990s. Elaine Douglas was part of this group. There was a bunch of them there. And the most people, Elaine Douglas told me, outside the White House protesting for UFO disclosure, the most people they ever got to protest was 19 people. So if you're the president, you're looking out the window and you see 19 people, are you going to put your presidency at risk for the UFO issue or for 19 votes, or are you going to just stay quiet? Because that's what politics, to me, always comes down to: get yourself reelected. You don't want to touch issues that are seen to be toxic, that are going to cost you votes, because the idea is not to do the right thing or policies or whatever. It's to get reelected. And anybody who thinks that it's not is off on the wrong trail immediately. And when it comes to trying to figure out the disclosure thing, their job is to get reelected. And if there's an issue that'll help them, in fact, I have an article on my website on the front page right now talking about senators and congressmen. And on there, I quote both Stephen Greer and Fox. Now, both these people had encounters with all the congressmen and the senators up on the Hill. And Fox took his documentary and he went to all the offices and he talked to all the people. And Stephen Greer did the same thing. He went up there with his disclosure project and he talked to all the congressmen and the senators. And both of them were told the same thing. You go out there and you get enough people to force us to do it. You get the big parade going, and as soon as you got the parade going, we'll get at the front of the parade.
Right.
But as long as there's nobody there, we're not putting
they're not going to be in the parade.
No. We need some political support. And that's where I talked about the senators and the congressmen, that sometimes I think that we're going after the president is the wrong thing to do, because the president doesn't have political cover. You should be going after the senators and the congressmen, because they've got political cover. And if you take a look back at all the successes that we've had in UFOs since 1947, times when disclosure almost came, it was always a congressman or a senator that was leading the pack.
Do you think also one of the reasons they're not disclosing, Grant, might be because these ETs may be doing something that would petrify us? If we were told,
petrify us, or I mentioned to you in the stuff I sent you, I've become very interested in this whole concept of the mind, and one of the things about in my 64 reasons is if you're the U.S. military, and this happens in 1947, the thing crashes or whatever, and you discover no, it's not German, it's aliens, and of course the immediate question is, what are they doing and what's their plan?
Right.
And the aliens have never really released their plan, but we know from 1950, there is in the Canadian government UFO document, the top secret document, where Wilbur Smith talks about what the American officials told him. He talks about the fact that flying saucers exist. It's the most highly classified subject in the United States, higher than the hydrogen bomb. This group was headed by Vannevar Bush, who's trying to figure out how the modus operandi. And then the part that everybody leaves out, the next line he says, and we were also told by American officials, that mental phenomena might be involved in the flying saucers. So from 1950, the American government has known that mental phenomena is part of the flying saucer phenomena. Now, this is before abductees. Now we know mental phenomena is involved, that aliens, for example, Stan Romanek, he's got these formulas coming out of his head, that the aliens seem to be in his head, and they seem to be directing him to do something. And a lot of contactees and experiencer people will talk about the fact that the aliens are giving them direction. They're showing them slides. They seem to be on a mission.
They want something. Yeah.
And if you take back in the 1950s, the contactees are all with this mental telepathy and they're channeling. In 1959, you got the CIA and the Navy intelligence are channeling an alien in 1959. So we knew about the mental phenomena from the time the contactees came in 1952. That's been public. But this we already knew. You can see from the document, December 1950, that already the government knew that mental phenomena was involved. So it's not just hardware. It's the fact that the government knows that the aliens are able to get into people's heads. And at UFO Congress, I was really shocked. I mean, UFO Congress, that all the speeches seem to have this underlay of this sort of the universal consciousness and the mind. There was David Serrata, which you can expect him talking about that kind of stuff. Stephen Greer talks about that kind of stuff. And then you get Stan Romanek coming and talking about this the kind of stuff where the aliens are sort of directing us. And then you get the Canadian government guy that was running the program.
Paul Hillier.
Being directed. So you have this thing about if you're American officials and you're looking at the fact that the aliens may be controlling what's going on. And even the one that actually really shocked me was Colin Andrews. When Colin Andrews comes and says that he believes now, and he had a number of examples, that the aliens are actually making the circles, and they're also forcing the crop circle hoaxers to make the circles, that everybody's being controlled by the aliens. And he had a number of examples that I thought were pretty legitimate. So it comes down to this whole thing of, are we being controlled? Is our destiny being controlled by the aliens? And that's got to be a scary thing for the government to realize that they can get in your head and they're giving instructions to various people in your country, and you really don't know what the end result's going to be.
What presidents have been able to bust through, Grant, to get information, or have they all been denied as well?
Well, that's the $64 question. If you take a look at this recent, let's go back. Okay, Clinton said numerous times, I tried to get to it and I couldn't get to it.
Right.
And behind the scenes, he was saying to Sarah McClendon when she asked him, Sarah, there's a government behind the government, and I don't control it. So it appeared that he was trying to get it. He was trying to shake out all these documents with this executive order to declassify all these documents and hope the UFO stuff came out. The one that appeared to know, and that was Reagan, and this was this thing that where disclosure almost happened. This was the story that I had on my website. This is a story about Steven Spielberg, that Steven Spielberg had gone to the White House in June of 1982, and he was screening E.T., the extraterrestrial, for President Reagan. And the story, according to Jamie Chandray...
Stephen King or Spielberg?
What's that?
Stephen King or Spielberg?
Spielberg, sorry.
Spielberg, okay.
Spielberg. So Spielberg is screening E.T., and the story that I had on my website that came from Bill Moore's associate, Jamie Chandray, who got it from Steven Spielberg, was that near the end of the movie, Reagan leaned over and said, you know, I bet you there aren't six people in this whole room know how true this whole thing is. And Spielberg is just floored. He can't believe that he said this. And then at the end of the movie, he stands up, and this is a story that Steven has told in the last 6 months. Somebody asked him about the story on my website, and he said, was this true? Did the president say this? And he said, yeah, the president stood up at the end of the movie and said, this whole thing is true as a number of the people in this room will know. And that would have been it. It would have been end game over. Spielberg tells the story. He's a reputable guy. And the media would have taken it, but the media didn't pick it up because the very next thing Spielberg said is he said it without a smile on his face, but I think he was joking. And that killed the story right there. But here's Reagan actually standing up and Spielberg confirming this, that he's basically saying this was for real.
What about the Nixon story, Grant, that he took Jackie Gleason down there at Homestead Air Force Base?
Yeah, there are about four different sources for that story. I think it's true. I talked to Larry Warren about it, about his encounter where he and Gleason were playing pool at Gleason's house in New York, how he had been contacted after the Reynolds from Forest book came out. And a lot of people said it was totally impossible because the president couldn't get a car and couldn't get away from his security and wouldn't be driving over and picking up Gleason and taking him to Homestead. What I found from my research going through all the files was that the president went down there. It was hundreds of times. So the Southern White House was at Key Biscayne, Florida.
Right.
And every time that the president would fly down, he would fly to Homestead, where the bodies, he supposedly took them, or the bodies, and he would take the helicopter from Homestead to Key Biscayne. So that confirmed that he would have known Homestead like the back of his hand. He was there all the time. And the other thing that confirmed it was people said, well, no, the president couldn't get loose. And I came up with a story, a Secret Service agent telling a story about how he got loose all the time, that he would get the cook, and the cook would drive the car, and Nixon would get under a blanket.
Kennedy used to do that. Kennedy used to go down and hit bars in Greenwich.
Yeah.
And, you know, Secret Service didn't even know where he was.
Yeah. And a lot of them will talk, if you read these books, like Kessler from the Washington Post has written a book about the Secret Service and all the different presidents. And a lot of them, Hillary is furious. I mean, they hated, I guess it's got to be tough to have these people around you. And Hillary had this rule, they had to stay 100 feet away, and they couldn't have uniforms on. And, you know, her and Bill called them the pigs. And it was just all, a lot of them really didn't like the Secret Service.
Well, Grant, I want to talk with you about your theory about consciousness in the UFO phenomena, how that works. And we'll also take phone calls with the final hour next on Coast to Coast AM.